what I observed is it's not just about all these individuals who take on these characteristics. The best leaders created cultures where that supported these characteristics in all of their staff.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. Hope you're having a great week. I am back from a conference that I attended in Oakland, California. Two-part conference for conferences, which was really learning about how to engage people in conferences, in retreats, in client meetings. Learned a lot of great tips and tricks to be more engaging, creating more of a safe environment for people to share. So excited about my learnings there. And then the second half of that conference was called, it was the Responsive Conference, and it was 2 days of leaders, consultants like myself, but also leaders in large organizations, a lot from Silicon Valley, coming in to talk about how do we do better in the workplace. And as you know, that is one of my great passions. So I kind of geeked out. It was a lot of fun. It was good to get out of the Texas heat for a little bit and spend a little time in Cali. But now I am excited to be back on track with my podcast. I've got some great guests lined up for you guys. I know I did a couple episodes that were me, solo episodes, really sharing some of the frameworks I've been working through with clients. But now I'm excited to get back in and have some guests on for you. And my guest today, I'm really excited. Hopefully, some of you, if you're in the tech industry, if you're a woman in the tech industry, you have heard her name, and it's Telly Whitney. She is a computer scientist, co-founder of the Grace Hopper Celebration, and former CEO of the Anita Borg Institute. She's also the author of her new book that came out this summer, Rebooting Tech Culture, How to Ignite Innovation and Build Organizations Where Everyone Can Thrive. In 2011, she was named Fast Company's Most Influential Women in Technology. She made that list and has received awards prior to that, 2008, 2009, Distinguished Service Award, 2019, 2022, 2024 for Robotics and Competition Foundation's National Academy of Engineering. She is well known in the tech industry and specifically known for really highlighting women in tech, which you'll hear more about, obviously, in our conversation. She's going to share what she's learned from decades of building inclusive, innovative cultures, from Silicon Valley startups to one of the largest gatherings of women in technology in the world. We talk about her 6 C's of culture: creativity, courage, confidence, curiosity, communication, and community, and how leaders can move beyond data and metrics to create workplaces where people truly thrive. If you've ever wondered what it takes to not just hire great talent, but actually keep their fire alive, this episode is for you. I hope you enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I am so excited about my guest today. I have Telly Whitney. Telly, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to today. Thank you.
Me too. This is going to be such a wonderful conversation. So let's dig right in. I mean, you have such an impressive career as both a computer scientist, CEO of the Anita Borg Foundation, co-founder of Grace Hopper, which is a women in computing conference. And I mean, so many things to get through, but tell us a little bit about yourself and your work in your own words.
Okay. Well, I'm a passionate supporter of technology. I mean, that's what drew me in. A lot of years ago, where I showed up in Silicon Valley, and I wanted to find a way to really contribute to the revolution that was happening at the time. So from the very earliest days, I was passionate about technology, but I was also one of very few women. And early on, looked for a community of women to help support me as I was going crazy with, I was working at a couple of startups. And through that work and a very close friend of mine named Anita Borg, we decided that we wanted to create a conference that celebrates the achievements of women. And thus the Grace Hopper Celebration was formed. It started, the first one was in 1994 and had about 500 people. It scaled to over 30,000 people in 2023. It's because this is such a it's such a celebration, and it's for a way for so many women to come together. It's not just women. I mean, we've always had men attend from the very first conference, but the conference focus is a celebration of women.
I love that so much, and I've never attended myself, but I have colleagues when I was at a tech company that was able to attend and remembered your name specifically and just really spoke so highly of the conference. So, and that was, I mean, gosh, that was 10 years ago. So I love that it's still growing strong and it sounds like just continues to grow.
Right. And I'm speaking there this year, so which I'm very excited. It's been quite a few years since I've really been back. So that's going to be fun.
Oh, fun. Well, and you you have a book now, Rebooting Tech Culture, How to Ignite Innovation and Build Organizations Where Everyone Can Thrive. Tell me, how did that book come about for you?
Well, so I took over what was just a fledgling nonprofit in 2002. My very dear friend, Anita Borg, had brain cancer, and so she passed shortly thereafter. And we grew the conference, and so through that effort, I had this chance to meet thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of young women who were excited about joining technology. I mean, that's what you saw if you attended the Grace Hopper Celebration. But for so many of them, who they had this fire in their eyes, they're really wanting to go. And as they join these companies, often 5 years later, that fire had been extinguished, and they often left. They didn't feel like they could contribute. And so I saw that. And I also saw that there were people who knew how to do it differently. And so I watched these executives, men and women, who created cultures that were more innovative and inclusive. And so I saw what a difference it was. And people did not know that when they took their first job. And so I wanted to speak the words of these people who were creating a more inclusive culture.
I love that. So in the book, you talk about, you focus on the six C's: creativity, courage, confidence, curiosity, communication, and community. So how do these six principles work together to create change in an organization?
Well, these are characteristics that all of us embrace as we think about innovation. I mean, we want to be more creative. We want to be more courageous. And I certainly, taking risks was an important part of my story. But what I observed is it's not just about all these individuals who take on these characteristics. The best leaders created cultures where that supported these characteristics in all of their staff. And in particular, creativity. I mean, I find it's fascinating. As I looked into the creativity, I think I'm surprised at how many people, there are not creative cultures. Mm-hmm. There are not, many places are more command and control. They're not trying to get the best creative ideas from their people and so forth. So I wanted to understand more about how you create this kind of culture.
And so how did you go about learning that? I mean, you talked to people at the conferences. Was it a lot of interviewing people, or did you go into organizations and work with them?
So a little bit of both. The catalyst was all these women that I had talked to over many years. But as I set out to write the book, I interviewed 50 people. 46 of those were, 32 were executives. So about half men, half women. And then there was another 12 young engineers that really talked about their own experiences. They okay. entered this workforce. So I set up 50 interviews, and they were each an hour. I mean, there's just a small piece in the book, but I heard their stories. I understood more about what they did do to be more inclusive in their own culture.
And so what would you say are those things to become more inclusive in a culture?
Well, I think that there are the six C's. I as you create environments where you are soliciting ideas. Let me take creativity, for example. Ed Catmull, who was at Pixar, wrote a great book called Creativity Inc. And he talked about these are films, so you need to be able to have creative ideas. You wanted to create environments where everybody sat at the table and felt like peers. I mean, that's really one of the keys, is to be able to create environments where people feel like that they are encouraged to contribute, to bring their best ideas, because we all know that the people that talk the most do not necessarily have the best ideas.
That's right. That's right. And what's so interesting, that what I've seen in some of the organizations that I've worked with, is oftentimes, and even as an employee myself, that those peer relationships are sometimes the most difficult when the organization is focused on competition. And so you find yourself competing with peers instead of building that trust and creating that, community or sense of belonging. So I love that you have the six C's. It sounds like a great recipe for, creating change in an organization.
Right. I mean, actually, as you said, that a seventh C could easily have been collaboration, because I do think that if you look at the best ideas, and this is social science documents this, that the best ideas are in partnership. I mean, many people are contributing to this. One of the problems with the tech industry is that there is this myth of the lone genius about that there is one great person who has this idea. I mean, Steve Jobs comes to mind. Right. And people have this, they pattern match, and they find people who are hyper-competitive, often masculine, and that's what they look for in good employees. But if you look at most of the breakthrough ideas of our generation, they were collaborative, including Steve Jobs, as Walter Isaacson documented in his books, The Innovators.
Yeah, and one of the things that you talk about is curiosity, which I think is probably a big key to collaboration. And I've, one of my favorite phrases that I've heard is that curiosity kills judgment. And one of the things that you talk about is that it's a skill that can be developed and embraced throughout the organization. So how do you develop curiosity as a skill?
Well, as a leader, so once again, what you're trying to do is develop these characteristics in your staff. And many times the most important behavior that you can make is to exhibit those. And so if you are looking to develop curiosity in your staff, first, you want to demonstrate curiosity yourself. And that's by looking out for new ideas. I mean, for any new product that you're creating, you want to be able to understand what the landscape looks like. So if you as a leader bring in speakers that are pretty far afield from where you are, but you're challenging the thinking of your staff, that's one way that you can demonstrate curiosity, but also, communicate. You like curiosity. And oftentimes, curiosity means that you're bringing in new ideas as presentations. Sometimes it's just facilitating conversations where you ask a lot of questions, which implies that you're also listening as you ask these questions and you're taking everything in.
I love that. And one of the things, one of my former roles in corporate was I oversaw the learning and development team. And so I wasn't an L&D professional. I just ended up as a leader over the team. And one of the things that I learned from my team was that in order to teach somebody something, you demonstrate it first, and then you have them do it while you supervise and you watch and you coach, and then they do it on their own. And so it sounds similar to what you're saying about teaching curiosity. As a leader, I have to demonstrate it first, then also communicate and coach with my employee, and then hopefully watch them do it on their own, but maybe even bring it back into a performance conversation or a one-on-one or a performance review where you can continue to reinforce that curiosity is something that we promote here. Yeah. So I think that's great.
I love what you're saying. And that's, I mean, if you think about it, as you're demonstrating curiosity for all the conversations that your team has, continuing to ask questions of whoever's presenting the ideas and encouraging others to ask questions. I mean, that's the most fundamental characteristics that you can demonstrate to encourage curiosity in all.
I love it. I love it. One of the other things that you talk about is courage. And that in order to have confidence, you first have to have courage. So can you explain how those two work together?
Sure. You know, one of the fundamental aspects from my career was this idea of courage. And in particular, taking risks. I believe that one of the ways that I ended up where I did is because when I was given the opportunity to take on some pretty big challenges, I said yes. And that idea of taking risks is important. And too many times, certainly in the tech culture, some people, since I worked a lot with women, particularly women, there's this real fear of being able to take these risks and show, saying, I am going to try this is a skill that, once again, you can develop. As you're looking to create a culture of courage, you want to highlight people who decided to take risks. So many of the stories that you're telling are about your own risk taking, about some of your staff's risk taking, mm-hmm. about applauding people when they showed the courage to try something different. Also, this gets down to failure. I mean, for most of us, a big part of career development is failure. I mean, in many ways, I feel like I learned the most from places where I failed. And so as a leader, and talking about failure and why it's so important as you go forward takes the stigma out of what some people perceive as failure.
Mm-hmm. I want to call out to a thread that I'm hearing in what you're saying, and that is some storytelling, that leaders aren't just, they're demonstrating these traits, but they're also sharing. And I think that's important because that's something that allows employees to connect with their leader and make them feel more human when they're vulnerable. And so do you agree that storytelling is maybe a piece? Well, you even said communication is one of those three C's. So,
right.
Yeah.
So storytelling is so important. And yes, you're right, Wendy. I mean, it's not just about, checking off action items as a leader of an organization. You're setting the standard for what everybody else is looking for. And so the stories you tell are going to greatly impact not just the person you're telling them about, but all the people in the room. And, as it gets larger and larger, many tens of thousands of people as you talk about this. And so you're telegraphing that this is what you are rewarding when you tell these stories. And yes, absolutely.
I love that. So those are some of the things, the C's we've talked about so far are things that some might categorize as maybe they call them soft. And maybe a lot of leaders rely heavily on data. And one thing, you know, as I've been trying to build my business and work with more CEOs, I've been, you know, focusing a lot on the data and how, you know, trying to tie back culture to turnover, to productivity, to possibly even revenue. But one of the things that you talk about is that when we look at data and when it, but when it comes to people problems, you point out that data usually doesn't tell us everything. And so what are companies missing when they're trying to just look at the data and not necessarily understand the whole people piece?
Right. I mean, I come from an engineering culture, so data is king. I mean, absolutely. But I also see the flaws in the data. And let's let's think about some of the places where people use data. So many tech companies have adopted reviewing hiring data, and especially around the diversity. So you've got goals that, I mean, I'm making this up, but some percentage come from are people of color, and you've got all these check boxes that you're walking down about your hiring. And the reason that they added these systems is because they weren't doing it. I mean, they were not finding people of color to hire, and so there was a problem they were trying to solve. But I believe that in many ways, like any good engineering manager, they over-engineered it. They don't, because hiring is only part of the issue. You really want to be able to create a culture where people can contribute their ideas. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about individual people that you've hired, it's not just getting them in the room, getting them into the company. It's providing them with opportunities to grow and change and take on significant new roles. And if you look at many of the stories of successful executives in my book about this, they have then become fierce advocates for some people and allowed, you know, found roles that allowed them to shine and thus got promoted. I mean, because often the promotions are as a direct result of leading a project. They are also developing a technical pipeline. One of the things that's unique in the tech industry is being, you know, the so-called fellows. Yes, that's a terrible name, but being able to have really deep technical expertise that's broadly diverse, and diverse not just in racial or gender, but also in disciplines and a lot of other factors that will help drive your business. Any great leader needs to marry is being able to take the data and then, you know, figure out what else needs to be done. I mean, one story I tell in the book was at GoDaddy, and they did a compensation analysis of, across genders, and found that you know, there was some discrepancy, but not as much as they had expected. But then they started looking at the promotion rate and realized that men were being promoted at a much faster rate. So it wasn't just about the compensation data per se today. It's really how they got there. And so that's an example of how you need to look at the data, but also understand what it means.
Yes. Yeah. And so you also say that it's not about lowering the bar of the technical skills required to do a job, but rethinking the skills that the organization needs and what talent looks like and where to find it. So can you explain how companies might improve in that area?
Well, you need to understand the characteristics that help you be successful at a job. And, you want to hire only qualified candidates, full stop. And so the best companies really spend time looking for the candidates that are being considered. Sometimes, and this is hard to quantify, is that the characteristics aren't just black and white. So, I mean, as a software engineer, you may find somebody who can write X number of lines of code and they have a track record. But if they can't communicate their, you know, what they're doing, then it's just not useful. So you need to think a little more broadly about the successful characteristics before you make the hire. And then you need to hire the most qualified candidates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That makes total sense. Tell me a little bit more about what you've seen from working on teams in the tech industry.
Well, so this is, I mean, the best teams create these collaborative cultures, team-based discussions. And this is harder than most people realize, because I talked about Ed Catmull and being able to see this as peers, and that's really important. You want to have conversations where ideas across the board are surfaced, and that takes careful attention, because as I said, sometimes the people who speak the loudest do not have the best ideas.
Right.
And so I've had some of the managers I interviewed, if somebody was very softly not contributing, they would call on them and ask for ideas unsolicited. And some real gems come up because of that. So that's where the manager needs to pay attention to where ideas are coming from and how they're communicating. I also think that there's ways to facilitate that. So Diane Greene, who was a co-founder of VMware, talked about taking her staff on scavenger hunts. And she would curate the team so that there were members of these teams from every different department. So at the end, people had a connection in departments all across the company, but they were trying to solve problems together. And that may be a little silly because it's not very product focused, but at the same time, it gets people to see how to work together, and they take that back with them.
I 100% agree. And I think for a while now, people have been saying, you know, culture isn't pizza parties and ping pong tables, and it's not, but that can be part of it. I mean, creating environments where people can come together outside of work or with work put aside temporarily to build those bonds of friendship is really important. And we know the Gallup study that shows that having a best friend at work makes, you know, increases engagement. So right. Building those friendships and creating that sense of belonging, whether it's through scavenger hunts or doing something like Strength Finders or DISC or something where you learn more about each other's individual strengths, I think helps and really creates that community and sense of belonging. So I think that's great.
Right. And community comes in all shapes and sizes. I mean, communities are sometimes the team that you're working on. I mean, the best teams, they really feel like they're pulling together, they're trying to deliver. I mean, this is why startups are so successful, is that they're truly innovative, or they're not going to survive. But then also finding communities for those that are the only. So some place that they can go that's safe, that where they can be around people that look like them. And that's why the Grace Hopper celebration, for example, was so successful. It's not, you don't want that all the time, but it's a way to build up your confidence, to build up that internal sense of, I do have something to offer, so I should contribute right now.
That's a great point. I was going to do the same thing, really tying it back all together to the Anita Borg Foundation and Grace Hopper. Is when I was at that tech company and we started forming employee resource groups, and we formed the Women's Employee Resource Group. I think it was called, we called it POWER. It was an acronym for something that had the name women in it. But a group of the ERG got to go to Grace Hopper, and that was really about them finding their place, finding their people, you know, not just in our organization, but nationwide, globally, you know. And so I think I've had someone on the show before go into detail about employee resource groups and just in larger organizations, how impactful they can be for people to find their people.
Right. I mean, they are quite successful, and there's, I mean, as companies get bigger and bigger, there's the large ERGs, like the, there's a, you know, one of the large tech companies, they have a women's conference. And so that's many thousands of people.
Yeah.
But often the another impactful approach is to find small groups. So one of the young women I interviewed, she had a group of six women that she had gotten to know, and once a month they went out for lunch. So they came from across the company, but they were able to find their own community. So you want to have large and small.
So as we kind of wrap up, is there anything that you would tell leaders that are, you know, want to build an intentional culture, want to create a place of innovation? What would be any guidance for them?
So I would say that technology is changing our lives. It's really, it's making fundamental difference in our future. I mean, if you think about all the things that are going to be happening in our lifetime, technology is at the heart of it. And you want to have an inclusive culture. You want to get the best ideas as you move towards that. And in terms of for individuals, as they think about their own culture at their company, just be intentional. I mean, pay attention. Listen to the people who are willing to speak up. Design systems where they're both contributing ideas, but also communicating, and also providing candid feedback at times between each other. I mean, the best ideas are not going to just be perfect out of the gate. It's the interchange, the collaboration that really makes a difference.
Wonderful. So well said. Telly, thank you so much for joining us today. If people want to reach out to you, find you, get your book, how do they do that?
Well, I have a website, tellywhitney.com, and my book is on there, and you can reach out to me, and I'd love to hear from all of you. Thank you.
Fantastic. I'll put that information in the show notes so people can find you easily. I really appreciate your time. This has been such a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
Wendy, thank you so much for doing this work. It's important.
Thank you. That's it. Thank you so much for joining me for this conversation with Telly Whitney. I hope you're walking away with new insights on how to create a culture where innovation and inclusion go hand in hand. If today's episode resonated with you, I'd love for you to share it with a colleague or another leader who's working to build a stronger culture. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes of the Culture Coach podcast. Remember, culture isn't just what happens when you're not looking. It's what you choose to create every single day. Lead it with intention, and your people, your organization will thrive. Until next time, have a great week.